Perfect. Welcome. Today is Wednesday, right? Welcome to a deep dive on biomolecular polymers. Should be a very interesting talk. Hopefully you had a good time so far at TechEd. We're going to be talking about why SharePoint and Azure are just playing better together. Just let me get a poll in the room first. How many IT pros do I have in the room? Okay, half. How many developers? Whoa, we could have a face-off here, huh? All right, well, my name is Steve Fox, director at Microsoft. Thank you very much. 8:30, I know it's always rough to get up in the morning. I think this is really exciting because I've been talking a bit about SharePoint and Azure for quite some time, and I think for the first time it's actually very, very compelling that these two technologies are coming together. I'm sure you saw the keynote where we showcased Aflac, which was a SharePoint site built on IaaS. I'll talk a bit about IaaS and SharePoint today. My team was part of that, and it was very exciting to see that come to life, and that will continue as an engagement for us. But if we think about the types of things that we'll talk about today and the goals for today's session, really what I want to do is I want to give you kind of a rounded view of how these technologies come together. There are elements for the developer, and there are elements for the IT pro, so you both should get something out of this. And I'm going to walk through four core scenarios that I think are relatively interesting, cherry-picking some functionality from the new spring preview, as well as looking at Office 365 late in the session and seeing how that ties into Azure as well. That's the overarching goal. Here's my agenda, fundamentals, four scenarios, summary, quite simply, okay? And I'll try and emphasize architecture and demos when I go through each of these four scenarios, so at least you'll get a similar view of what I'm trying to do across four scenarios. So if you think about the fundamentals here, the reason I like the way that we've evolved this story is I think there's three ways to talk about it. So infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service. I'm sure many of you have heard these terms before, but when you think of software as a service, think of Office 365. It's out of the box. You subscribe, you get all of these features, and you can go to town. Platform as a service really represents, code data deployed into Azure with the services capabilities that you can leverage there to build applications. And IaaS is really about the lift and shift approach, right? We have a VHD, we want to virtualize it, put it in the cloud, and have it running for us, spin it down, spin it up when we need it. Now, I'm not going to go through every one of these bullet points, but you can imagine for each of these scenarios, there's different things that you can do. And there's different applications and solutions that are appropriate for each of these areas. And so I've listed a few that I thought were top of mind for me when I was kind of walking through, kind of putting this deck together. We'll walk through various parts of these three areas, but I think the key takeaway is that the story is so much more evolved now when these two technologies come together. There's a lot for the developer, and there's going to be a growing amount for the IT pro. So I think it's a very exciting time for these two technologies to come together. So I did want to start out by just kind of calling out what's in the spring preview versus what's in the GA. I don't know how many of you have actually seen this slide this week or have gone to any Azure sessions, but I thought it worth calling out that if we look at kind of the layered model here, where we've got the top level being the clients and applications that consume parts of Azure, the blue squares here represents stuff that's already shipped, and the green squares represent stuff that was shipped last week or is continuing to be shipped. I'm going to focus today on three areas. I'm going to focus on the SQL data sync because I think there's an interesting story there when we start talking about taking subsets of data that you have on premises and exposing those out to the cloud, because you get into conversations when you go to Europe about, I can't expose this data into the cloud. It needs to be, kind of remained on premises. So that tends to be an interesting scenario. The second one that keeps coming up is, what do we do with videos, right? Learning solutions, marketing, campaigns, these types of things. So I wanted to talk a bit about media services. I'll also talk about the VM story as well, infrastructure as a service, and how SharePoint plays into that as well. For the other stuff, there's lots of sessions. I actually put a session sampler on my blog earlier on this week for all the Azure sessions. And if you don't get to them in person, they're going to be broadcast on Channel 9 after the show. So certainly I would get caught up with those. But point is, there's a ton of stuff that's existing, and there's a lot of stuff that's new to the game here as well. And it's certainly worth checking a lot of this out, because you look at each of these little squares, and in some way, shape, or form, you can leverage them and integrate them with SharePoint. So just cherry-picking one outside of the three that I've checked, Hadoop and Stream Insight and SQL Reporting, that kind of bottom right-hand corner, there's a lot that we can do by grabbing data, map reducing it down into something that can end up in, let's say, a power pivot, you know, or a power view type BI instrument for SharePoint. So, you know, just a quick view on what's here today and what's coming, and the three things that I'll focus on plus one, which will be four scenarios. The first one I'll talk about is data synchronization. Again, what I mean by that is I want to be able to have an on-premises instance of my SharePoint site that's leveraging data, but I want to expose only a subset of that out to the cloud and use it either in SharePoint Online or in a device, these types of things. So I'll walk you through how you can do that. We'll talk a bit about streaming media. Now, it's early bits for streaming media, so you'll see me kind of cobble together some things. But the point is, I'm going to show you a bit about what you can do with Azure Media Services, and then show the experience within SharePoint of what that looks like. The third thing we'll do, we'll talk a bit about the lift and shift. I actually hate this term, but I put it up here because it's so pervasive. It's really disingenuous because a lot of times there's so many things running inside of VM, it's tough to kind of just lift and shift it. But the point is, this is basically creating a VM in the cloud that has SharePoint on it, and we'll actually expose it out to all of you today too. So. And then the last one is just an all-cloud solution. I've talked a bit about the fourth one before. I've not talked about the first three, so I really want to focus on the first three. If I get to the fourth one, great. If I don't, I'll just post my slide deck to my blog today with some information and some pointers for more information there, okay? All right, so let's jump in. Data synchronization, if we think about the architecture of what this would look like, we can think about, we have a SharePoint on-premises instance. It could be a farm, it could be standalone, could be whatever. In my case, what I'm going to do, I'm going to show you an event planning site that is using SQL Server, and I only want to expose a certain part of that out to a Windows Phone 7 app. Now, if we think about this thing called SQL Azure Data Sync, it allows us to have agents, one sitting in the cloud, one sitting on our on-premises instance, that allows for a synchronization of data across these two paradigms. So we can have this data sync module that basically takes data from SQL Server, pushes it over to SQL Database. SQL Database is basically the rebranded version of SQL Azure. There's nothing really different about the underlying technology other than the brand that's coming into play to bring the Windows Azure more in a consolidated view. So we have data there. Okay, now what do we do with it? We can project it out to other devices, other sites, whether it be a SharePoint site, whether it be a device, whether it be another website, whatever. The point is, I've now taken some data from my on-premises SharePoint instance or underlying SQL Server, and I've exposed it out into SQL Database here, which then I can then, again, project up into other areas. Okay? And so what I'll do is I'll walk you through a demo that kind of shows you how to do this in practice. Okay? So let's jump over to my demo machine. All right, so first of all, let's talk about the scenario. Basically, this is my tech ed site. It's an event planning site. You can see I've got, you know, a rotating banner of speakers. I've got a calendar. If we look down here on the left-hand side, I've also got things like, you know, speaker lists and presentation lists. And this, in essence, represents how I'm managing all the speakers in a track, all right? This is very common for us to do at Microsoft. We always use SharePoint to manage all of our assets when we're, you know, doing things like managing conferences. Okay, so if we go into the speakers list, you can see here that I've got some information here. Now, this is an external list. You all know what an external list is, right? Does anybody not know? Okay, a few of you. Okay, so an external list basically takes a SharePoint list, all right, and dynamically loads data that lives in SQL Server. Okay, and it can be any kind of lob system. It could be SQL Server, it could be PeopleSoft, it could be anything, right? It just so happens that the adapter or the external content type is much easier to create if you're doing it against SQL Server And also here in SQL Server, this represents our point of synchronization for our on-premises instance of SharePoint to our cloud instance. So this data here, which is these six folks here, basically is being surfaced in my speaker list here. And of course, I'm maintaining presentations and everything like that. Now let's take a look at one of these specific entities here. You can see that we've got Saeed Chopra, we've got an employee ID, senior architect, et cetera, et cetera. All the information that we have. Now the interesting thing is, let's say we're pulling information here on our SharePoint site, and I want to expose some of that information out to people like yourselves who are walking around and saying, hey, I want to see the comments or the ratings on a particular session. And I want that to come back to my SharePoint site, but I don't necessarily want to exploit PII like employee ID out to y'all. That would be bad, it would be against policy. And so the thing is, how do I get around actually exposing that out? So that takes us kind of to the second point, right? We want to go in and we have an agent running on our local on-premises server here, and the agent is this Microsoft SQL Data Sync agent. And basically what this represents, it represents something that can mediate communication between Windows Azure and SharePoint, in this case SQL Server, that's the underlying external list. All right? Now how you get there, how many of you actually built an Azure app before? Okay, a few of you. So maybe it's worth just taking a step back and talking a bit about the portal. This is the old portal, but it's where you can find the data sync. You can go to microsoft.com/Windows Azure and get 90-day free trial to use Windows Azure. But in essence, you know, you can look at things like hosted services here. I've got database. You know, so I've got code and data that I can manage in the cloud. Azure allows you to do that. You know, you saw a lot of it in the keynote, the big kind of cloud operating system push this week. There's a lot of momentum for Microsoft in and around this idea of kind of moving data and applications out into the cloud, okay? One of these options here is Data Sync. Now again, if we jump into Data Sync, you can see here that I've got a sync group that I've created. Now there's a great walkthrough on this in the Windows Azure training kit. I'm not going to walk you through everything just for the sake of time, but there's a great reference that'll walk you through how you do all of this. What I've done here is I've basically set up, you can see I've got an on-premises and cloud connected database, right? So the on-premises database was that one I just showed you. The SQL Azure one is another one I've got sitting in the cloud. The schemas have to match, so you can't have a mismatch of schema with different data types. Obviously, there would be a conflict if you try and synchronize. So you have to have a, you know, a somewhat similar or asimilar schema. And what I can do is basically go through and build through this wizard. You can create a new sync group and kind of just, you know, go through and give it a name and then add different databases here just by clicking. And that gives you an agent. You download the agent. You connect it all up. Like I said, there's a full walkthrough on this, and it's a very good walkthrough. Now, the thing is, once I get these two databases connected, you can see on the right-hand side here that here's the information I want to expose out to, let's say, an application that's going to consume this data. Again, it could be SharePoint Online. As you know, you've got the BCS functionality, which I'll show you at the end of today's presentation, that allows you to connect into SQL Azure, pull it out, or SQL Database, sorry, pull it out, and expose it there as an external list on the cloud. Or here you can see that I've got basically this set of columns and data that doesn't include the employee ID. And what I'll show you in just a sec is I've got a Windows Phone 7 app that's going to consume that through a REST service. The way in which I can edit the data set to expose, here you can see that there's my speakers table. And on the right-hand side, those are all the columns to synchronize. And I've unchecked the one that I don't want to expose out. Now, of course, whenever you build an app in the cloud, if for those of you who have built an app, you can choose what you serialize, deserialize, and expose in an app. But what this will come through, will just come through as a null value. So there'll be nothing there when it comes through. The point is, I've filtered out important information that may be PII against policy to expose in the cloud, and I've done it through this method of synchronization. Okay? So at this point, I can basically go ahead. You can see that here the agents are good. I've got one agent in Windows Azure. I've got one agent locally. They're communicating, so I can talk with these two things. I can enable this every 30 minutes, every 30 days, every month. Because we're pulling data in and we're synchronizing it into Windows Azure, there's no charge. Remember, there's this egress and ingress type charge approach with Windows Azure. If you start pushing data out, you'll get charged. Pushing data in, or pulling data in, rather, there's no charge. So just keep in mind on that. And then when I want to sync, I can basically just go sync now. And that takes the data from my on-premises instance. You can see here that it's synchronizing. And there we go. It's synchronizing and, of course, pulling up that data that I have on my SQL Server on-premises and exposing it out into the cloud. Now, while that's synchronized, we can go over here into database. And I think it's down here. And we can get a view of what that data actually looks like. I'll manage this. Just take a second to open this up. You'll notice that while this is loading up, you'll notice that there's certain parts of the Windows Azure portal that are still Silverlight. Those will eventually migrate over, but right now the new portal is in HTML5, the main portal, and some elements specifically here with regard to SQL Azure, which again is in the process of being rebranded, will at some point in time become HTML5 as well. I don't know when that's going to happen. You'll just have to kind of put up with the two being mixed, but it's not such a bad experience. Okay, that's loading up right now, and again, let's see how we're doing on the synchronization. It's good, so it's synchronized. So we'll go over here. That's connecting. While this is connecting, is there any questions that anybody has? I don't mind an interactive session, so if you have a question, just shout it out. Yep. Well, basically what's happening, it doesn't pull it, right? It's not necessarily a push, it's a pull. So you have the schema there. You just have a null value that comes through. So on this side, I don't think I've marked it as required on the data sync side. So on the SQL Server side, it's required. On the other side, it's not. Okay? Yes, sir. I think you could. I've not done it, but I'm pretty sure you could. Yeah. All right, so this is taking a little while to connect. Let's move on. All I was going to do was going to show you what this view was like in SQL Azure. Let's jump over and actually show you an app that actually builds. Oh, there we go, just as I said that. So this is the SQL database view. You can see here that I've got my speakers table. Here I can go ahead and basically select all, submit a new query. And here what we can do is we can go back. Let's add a speaker. Items, new item. And we'll say 7. Foo. 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 Click Save, that should go back. And we'll go back into our management here. We'll go Sync Now. And that'll take a second to synchronize. And what we should see, in essence, when that finishes synchronizing, we can go back here, rerun that, and you should see that new foo up there in the, and you can see the employee ID is coming through as null. There we go, it's good. Rerun that. And there's foo. The point is, I can have immediate kind of transactions. Now, again, if you get into large amounts of data, you might want to save a little bit of time there because it's going to take a little time to go ahead and sync. Okay. So let me do this. Let's jump over and actually consume it in a slightly different way. I think that's 4. All right. So in this case, what I've done is now we've got our SQL Server, our SharePoint instance, we've got a sync mechanism that sits in between, and we've got the ability to kind of push that out into the cloud. The question is, there's different ways in which we can consume that. I could, like I said, consume it via SharePoint Online, or I could basically consume it in what I've got here as a REST service. Now here what I've done is basically just created a fairly simple WCF data service. As we move forward, you might want to create either a web API app or WCF REST service. Any number of mechanisms to actually connect into that service. Here you can see the data when I've created the service. And if we go in here and just get that, you can see here I'm just grabbing some context to grab the data. And let's just open that up here a little bit. Very simply, going in, setting some context for that data. I've got a query, and then I've got an event to handle, basically binding it to the application. It's going to be a very simple application. It's my Windows Phone 7 application. But because it's REST, here, if you go back here for just a second, you can see that here's my REST service in the wild that I've deployed into Azure. And of course, I can go here. And we should see foo at the bottom here. There we go, there's foo. So again, as we add data and synchronize that data, it's available for consumption through this REST service that we can then go ahead and build an app against. And again, once you've got a REST service, it's fairly easy to build it in any number of clients. We'll go ahead and start this up. Say yes. Excuse me. This will take a sec to load. So any questions while this is loading up? Yep. All right, I guess the underlying question is, if you have a site collection on SharePoint on-premises, can you take that underlying content database and move it into a SQL database? No. No, we'll talk a bit later. I think the what you'd want to do is take your underlying site collection or like maybe your VM and put it in infrastructure as a service. And I'll show you later on how that can be done, okay? So here's my Windows Phone 7 app. Again, you can see foo, right? So it's all real time. Today's data synchronization works. And I'm not going to belabor the point that you can take multiple clients and consume that REST service. I'm sure many of you have consumed a REST service or know what one is. The point is, now I have multiple ways of taking this data and consuming it from a cloud-based source. Okay? Fair play? Okay. That was the first demo again. If we think about going back to the slide deck here and talking a bit about process. Okay, there we go. Basically, what I did was I replicated the schema to SQL Azure. I made sure that there was a data sync agent on my server. I registered my SQL Server database with that so they could communicate with one another. Edited the schema in my, sorry, I'm using SQL Azure. I shouldn't be using a SQL database to make sure they synchronize. And of course, I surfaced that data in any number of ways. Okay. One other thing here I did want to throw out. This is very interesting. There are multiple ways in which you can connect your SharePoint instance with Windows Azure, right? We talked about one kind of just with that question you just asked. That's the bottom one, really, if we're thinking about, you know, kind of lifting and shifting. But there's other ways as well. The one I showed you at the top was SQL Azure Data Sync or SQL Database Data Sync. Application layer, there's a service bus element as well. So if you wanted to flick messages from your SharePoint site on premises out to devices or out to applications that consume that, you can use the service bus to do that. Very interesting model. The third one there is Windows Azure Connect. It's still in beta, but you can do machine-to-machine connectivity. And the last one I think is very interesting. In fact, with my team alone, we've had multiple fairly large enterprises coming at us already, given the spring preview, to build out proof of concepts using that last one. Again, that's my third area. So it's a very interesting one. So let's talk a bit about streaming media. Streaming media or Windows Media Services is a new area that's basically in beta right now. There's no UI for it. It's basically a set of APIs. So I don't have this fancy, you know, demo to show you all the UI. But it's really interesting because think about the process today. Let's say you want to build some marketing campaign or a learning system or something like that where you've got videos. The process to do that today can be somewhat laborious, right? You take your video, you manually encode it, transcode it, find a place where you can put it, you know, you stream it with some sort of streaming mechanism. It can be a bit of a pain. So the question then becomes, how do we actually take the services or the things that you're doing, this workflow, and put that in as a set of services in the cloud and allow you to kind of put assets in the cloud, run through the encoding process, storage process, blah, 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 that you can then use the cloud as that kind of port of entry and the workflow management and even the storage element to then begin streaming videos to either SharePoint Online or SharePoint on-premises. And in many cases, what you probably want to do is you want to use the same assets and maybe port to both. And so this kind of begs the question of how can we then use Azure Media Services in a way that's constructive for SharePoint or SharePoint Online. Now again, lots of things that are being built into this. Some of these have not seen the light of day yet, but there's a great SDK and set of APIs out there on MSDN that you guys can check out that was just released late last week. But you can see here are the core elements, right? And so if I were, for example, let's just kind of jump off and talk a bit about the architecture. If I were to, let's say, take an object, some sort of WMV file, and I want to get that into Azure Media Services, what I'm going to show you with a simple demo is I've got a console app that's going to throw it up, encode it, and bring it back down just to prove out that there's services in the cloud. I'll show you something called an SMF player, which is basically a Silverlight media player. And as many of you know who are SharePoint enthusiasts, there's something called the Silverlight media web part. We can use that both SharePoint on-premises and SharePoint in the cloud to then point to a transcoded, encoded video that's sitting up there and just pull it in and play it in the context of this SMF player. Very cool stuff, right? Because what that means is I then have portability because my video goo lives in the cloud, right? And then I can build my applications and port them across, especially if you're looking at using Silverlight, right? I was quoted once as saying Silverlight's not dead. So it's still humbly roaming along here. So here you can see my architecture. I've got my media services. Basically, that was that architecture with all the stuff in the middle. So you've got all these services available to you as, let's say, a video enthusiast. If we think about how media services leverages parts of Azure, there's this thing called the Content Delivery Network, or CDN. And what happens is when it distributes and kind of fires and streams these videos off, it uses the CDN cache, right? And so you can think of videos kind of moving along this in this streaming fashion, whether it's progressive download or streaming. And then, of course, you can do that for different devices, whether it be PC, web, phone, or other. And so the point is I can build an experience where SharePoint is leveraging these services and, of course, the video elements that I'm putting up into the cloud. Okay? So with that, let's jump into the second demo. Okay. So let me see what's the first one to do here. The first one is this one called Nimbus Client. Basically, this is a simple console app. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to walk through just a little bit of code. You can see at the top here, there's this var context get context. In essence, for the folks that may not be conversant with code, all this is doing, it's calling a method called get context. Now, get context is this guy down here, the cloud media context. For any time you try and do something in Windows Azure Media Services, you have to attach an account and some information with it, and then have some jobs and objects that kind of are accessed off of that, right? That's your workflow. So for example, get my account, got my object, I need an asset I'm going to upload, I need reference to my account first in order to do that stuff. Because of course you need an account to understand where you're putting the blob in storage, okay? And so a lot of the services along the way kind of help manage that. So that's the get context. And I'm just going to do something very simple here, is I'll go ahead and I'll create something called iAsset, which is basically just an asset. It's going to be a blob. And I'm going to basically throw it up, upload it into my Windows Azure Media site, my account. And you'll see some kind of console write-outs just to show what's going on. And if we look at the actual video, the video is, let me see here, I believe. In this case, I'm just using a simple Wallaby's video. And that's going to be uploaded and downloaded. Now, it takes typically 2 or 3 minutes to upload and download, so I'm not going to show the entire thing, but I'll run it so at least you can see that, A, we're encoding media on the fly here, so it's taking that video that's sitting on my local drive. The current progress represents the fact that I've connected to my account, it's pulling that video, that media up, and then now it's creating a new job, which is my workflow, and it's encoding it. And what it's doing, it's encoding it from WMV to MP4. The point is, this is just one of many different types of workflows that you could do or processes that you could run in the cloud that you would normally do sitting in, let's say, in Expression Encoder or some other encoder. Okay? So there's this nice set of services where you can do all this in the cloud. All right? So again, I'm not going to belabor that. But what will eventually happen is I can upload, encode, and then I could store that in my blob storage. Blob storage in Azure allows me then to have this place of streaming where I can take that video and begin to stream it into an application. Now, I mentioned something called the SMF player. This is the SMF player here. And you can see that if I go over on the right-hand side, I've basically got a video that I'm mapping to that's in the cloud. So we'll go ahead and just play this. You'll see that it just is a simple SMF video. And this is being streamed in, so you can see it's a fairly nice experience. But again, this is a self-contained Silverlight app. Now, what I really want to happen is I want to take this Silverlight app, and I could either build it into a broader app, or I could take it and put it into its own. There you go. Does that feel good? I can take this app, and it's a Silverlight app, so again, I can embed it, or I can build around it, or I can just take this as a self-contained thing and push up into the cloud. So here, if we go into my SharePoint page, this is my School of Fine Arts SharePoint Online page. If I wanted to, let's just go edit page. For those of you who haven't seen the Silverlight web part, I can go and insert more web parts. And that will bring up, let's see here, media and content. This guy here, click add. And all I need to do is provide basically a URL, okay? I've put my Zaps file here, so we'll just get out of this. Go over here to the Zaps file. You can see there it is there, my TechEd smooth streaming example. I go into my art videos, which is where I'm actually containing all my videos. And here you can see that we've got this same experience in SharePoint Online, streaming from Azure Media Services, my Blob storage account, directly into my SharePoint Online site. The nice thing here, again, is you don't necessarily have to have just one little self-contained SMF player. You could have a whole application built around it where maybe you're loading specific applications, which via a REST API, you could pull in, connect, and dynamically play. Okay? Other nice thing here is because this is an SMF player, we can expand, we can move forward, you know, have some fun with this. There's our Buck Bunny. Oh, there we go. Apparently there's something with getting hit in the head with nuts in this particular cartoon. I don't know why. It's a little violent, but it is what it is. Okay. So let's do this. Let's just kill that. That's one way of doing it. I think this is the most interesting way because, again, you can leverage the services in the cloud to do a lot of the work for you, which I think is key. There's also other ways, of course, that you can stream. I could just create a little HTML with some JavaScript that will actually pull in directly from my Blob account. And here you can see that's that same video I encoded and stuffed up there. And now that can be pulled in as well from a different method. The point is there's multiple ways of skinning this cat. But at the end of the day, all these services are available for you in Windows Azure Media Services as it grows. Like I said, right now, it's a series of APIs. But very, very interesting because I constantly hear, hey, how do we, you know, build a good streaming solution for SharePoint or SharePoint Online and not have to incur this crazy cost of storage and blah, 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 right? So that was a fairly simple example. Now, the other one I will show, I think is two, is there's also on SharePoint on-premises, right? We can go here in media, and this is the exact same experience. Let me just load that up. There we go. The exact same experience on SharePoint on-premises, right? So again, we're sharing the same code, the Silverlight code, and basically accessing that same video that's sitting in Blob storage. Again, with all the workflow that sat behind it, put it up there, and we're kind of got that portability aspect, okay? Yes? That's a great question. So the question is, how do you secure a video that only your site can access? So there's two sets of permissions there, right? There's SP user, right? And then there's the blob. Let's talk about the blob for a second. In Azure, basically what you can do is you can set the permissions on a given blob, right? You set the permissions to be read-only. You can set them to be, you can only look at this for 30 minutes, blah, blah, blah. Or you could be completely public. There is a hands-on lab where we've managed to take SP user and map it to shared access permissions, right? It's tricky. What I would suggest is actually trying to create a site and expose it through the shared access permissions that you have on the blob. That's probably the best way, but there is a way in which you can connect the SP user with the shared access permissions. It's a little bit of code that you have to write. If you want to see me afterwards, I'll send you the hands-on lab that we've put together that kind of rolls through how you do it. But it is a little tricky. But it can be done. But what I would do primarily is look at how you DRM and basically use the shared access permissions on the blob. Okay? But it can be done. Good question. All right, so jumping back to our PowerPoint. Any other questions? Sorry. No? Okay, cool. So this is basically just a code snippet. Like I said, I'll post the deck so you have this. This just kind of is a recapitulation of, hey, you need to set some media context before you get in there and do any jobs on it, right? And if you want more information, there's a great MSDN article on this. Well, it just came out in June. And like I said, there's a complete SDK, MSDN set of assets that you can use as well that just came out last week. All right? So the process, how did I get from A to Z? I created my video. Then I leveraged the Azure Media Services to do a bunch of goo, right? I uploaded the video, you know, used the codecs that are basically native to the services within Azure to encode it, transcode it. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that you could do. Save it to blob. Then, of course, I leveraged that URL that was created in the SMF player, okay? Or some custom player that you would want to build. And, of course, you have streaming or progressive download that you can use in that capacity. And then, of course, I just embedded it inside my SharePoint or SharePoint Online site using the Silverlight app that was built, okay? Let's talk a bit about lift and shift right now. Lift and shift is kind of an interesting area. This is, again, where we're getting into SharePoint and infrastructure as a service. My team is being inundated with requests with this. It's a very interesting thing. It just came out, obviously, you know, very important to Microsoft and the cloud story. If we think about the architecture of what I'll show you here, basically what I've done is I've taken a standalone SharePoint server. Paul Stubbs tomorrow morning is going to walk through how you create a SharePoint farm. So I would encourage you, if this is an interesting area for you, I would definitely check out his talk as well. Now what we've got is this dashed line because I've not done it in my demo, but you can actually build a VPN tunnel. But what we can do is we can take an existing VM that we have on premises today, or we can build a new one if we wanted to, and we could put it into the cloud in some capacity. This shows a fairly complex or small SharePoint farm, right, where you can see on the right-hand side I've got web front ends, indexer, app server, SQL server, et cetera, et cetera. And the right-hand side, I've transposed that into a farm. In the demo that I'm going to show you, I've got a standalone guy here, and I have a standalone guy here. Okay, but you can get as complex as you want. The VPN tunnel is interesting. That's the Project Brooklyn. I don't know if any of you have had a chance to look at that, but there is a session this week on Project Brooklyn. What that allows you to do then is have existing assets over here on premises, and you could have your SharePoint farm in the cloud, and you can actually connect them up together via this VPN tunnel, and essentially it means you've got Active Directory connections that can connect the two, okay? All right, so let's go ahead and jump into what I'll show you here. All right, so where's my cloud guy? Here's my cloud. So this here is the new HTML5 portal. Obviously looked a little different from the Silverlight one I showed you earlier on with the data sync. But if you sign up for an account, you can kind of bounce across both of these for the next year, okay? So if you really like Silverlight, you just can't get away from it, you have a year to wean yourself off of it, okay? But HTML5, this is kind of where all the new functionality is being put. You can see here I've got this thing called Virtual Machine. On the left-hand side, I've got a whole bunch of other stuff as well. You know, websites, cloud services, SQL databases, et cetera, et cetera. You could think of each of these, so for example, websites. This is just creating a website. I can go here and create a website from a gallery or from a database. You can see that. I can kill that here. Virtual machines is the one I'm going to show you in just a sec. Cloud services, so if I want to deploy, let's say, a WCF or REST service, this is where my speaker's REST service is living here, and SQL database, so my databases as well. If we go in here to virtual machines, you can see I basically can go ahead and create new virtual machine. I can create it from a gallery. You saw this in the keynote. The way I created my SharePoint image was I actually created it from scratch. But I could upload an existing SharePoint VHD if I wanted to. Here I can go ahead and add a virtual name, foo are. And I could give it a password. It'll test out the strength for you to make sure you've got a high-grade password. I've got different sets of sizes I can use. Obviously, if I were going to use SharePoint, I'd probably want to use the Excel because that's a fairly beefy machine. For the sake of this one, let's just use small. And let's go foo bar. And that'll check that out. Yes, it's good. You can see here, I've actually got an SPV net. So this is where I've created a virtual network in the cloud of other, basically, other virtual machines that are now sitting in a network that are all connected via the same IP address. And so that's where you can actually create the SharePoint farm in the cloud. And again, Paul will walk through that tomorrow. And I go, basically go forward here, and you can see here's my subnets. And then I could just click OK, and that would go ahead and create that for me. And then what it allows me to do is I can basically connect into that particular machine. Here you can see that I've got a test SP running for today. I've got this dashboard here that provides some information about that. You can see some performance information that's been running. You can see I've got my URL. I've got my VIP. I've got some other information. I can go in here and look at endpoints. So, for example, I wanted you all to actually be able to access this machine today as we were doing this demo. So I've opened up the ports on that machine, and I've made my site anonymous so you can basically access it and play along. And so that allows me to do that right here. That's the TechEd port 80. And, of course, I've got some other configurations. So, for example, on the fly, I could either downgrade or upgrade this to another virtual machine size. Okay? So if you go back to the actual virtual machine, go back to our dashboard, test SP, let's go ahead and connect into this guy. All right, we'll open it up. And so now we're configuring a remote session. Basically, what we're doing here is remoting into a virtual machine, which I've dropped into a data center on the east coast of the US. And so here you can see I've got a SharePoint site. and I have a development experience here as well. So here, in essence, I've built out a web part that you can see is basically using the SQL adapter. And it's connecting into that SQL Azure, that SQL Azure list that's coming from my other service here. Remember I had the data sync service? So this is also communicating with that as well. Okay? And of course I've got the same experience there. I can go right click and deploy that into this particular SharePoint server. So here is interesting, just to prove out that this is actually, it is indeed talking to that particular SQL Azure data synchronization. We can go here and run this again. And of course there you can see the foo. The point is, what I have is I have this ability to not only have my information SharePoint site standing in the cloud, but I can also connect to services and data that's sitting in other elements of Windows Azure. So it's almost like we're connecting IaaS and PaaS together. I could even, if I wanted to, route back and talk to my on-premises SharePoint instance here as well, through the service bus or through other mechanism. And it just so happens here, we're talking back to my on-premises SharePoint instance via the data synchronization I showed you before. Okay? So we're connecting pieces up. It's not just this self-contained VM that you can put up there. The important takeaway is you can do other things with it, right? Take advantage of other parts of the platform. And here what we can see is I've got this Fabricam market analysis. That, in essence, is using a service that we've deployed into Azure. And all I'm doing here is it's getting data from the Windows Azure Marketplace. I've got some controls down here that allow me to update those controls based on the data coming in from different regions. And, of course, I can do this here, use the Bing Maps stuff and annotate the little pushpin heads with information coming from these different areas up there, all based on services that are coming from Azure. Now, let's try this. It's always dangerous when you say, let's try this and see what happens. Let's see if you can go here and get to this particular site, for those of you who have a laptop open or something like that. Basically, you know, you'll be able to see the same thing here. You'll see the same functionality. What you'll see, though, is it as read-only. Now, I'm contravening every SharePoint licensing law there is here by allowing other people to access my site. But hey, this is a demo. We're going to have some fun. And what we should be able to do is if you go to this particular site, you should see the same thing that I just showed you. Yes? Yes, it's self-contained. It's a standalone server, so it has its own Active Directory domain. You know, now what you could do, and this is what Paul's going to talk about tomorrow, is you could literally take a SharePoint farm and have its own Active Directory server and indexing server, app server, you know, web front end, all that stuff tomorrow. But this is, it's a self-contained Active Directory. It's got its own server, right? So just imagine, you know how you have a server underneath your underneath your desk today that you've put SharePoint on? I've basically taken that guy and virtualized the entire thing in infrastructure as a service. Okay, and now, again, I'm contravening every license law by saying everybody here can access it. Has everybody tried to access it? Are you able to access it? Yeah? Good. Awesome. So it did work. So yeah, so basically, in a nutshell, what we've done here is taken, taken this particular site here, and this is running on my local machine here. You can see I'm accessing it via the IP address. And basically taken that site, created anonymous access. You all can have some fun with these two widgets I've put on here. Again, you can see that here on my one machine, I can say go and get data. That goes and gets foo, which is my other machine here. And so I've got all these things connected, and literally it's a virtualized machine that's sitting in the cloud. Now, the question is, why do you want to go and do this, right? And this kind of gets at the heart of why is Azure an interesting vehicle for, you know, for organizations today. And I think what we see is it's a little more cost-effective approach as opposed to spending weeks and weeks provisioning hardware and getting it into the lab. You can take a subset of that and get it up and running very quickly. We're seeing some interesting uptake in this model with startups. We're seeing some interesting uptake with large enterprises when they want to do dev and test environments. Now, it remains to be seen, like a lot of the stuff we're dealing with SharePoint right now is SharePoint Fizz. There are some regular collaboration workloads that companies are coming to talk to us about that they want to actually put on to these boxes and put them out in the cloud. It's pretty greenfield, pretty interesting, and I think we're going to see a fairly interesting run for this particular model. Yeah? So the question was, what would bring you to a decision to either go SharePoint Online, if I can paraphrase, or decide to put a VM in the cloud and do SharePoint on-premises in the cloud effectively? And I think it comes down to when you look at SharePoint Online, you know, let's say the developers, the SharePoint developers in the room will understand this, right? There's a certain set of limitations you have with SharePoint Online. If you just want a cost-effective, you know, I don't want to care about any hardware management at all, I just want to have the service, Office 365 is probably the choice for you. If you just want to have some collaboration across the team, you don't have a lot of, you know, customizations you have to build into it, that's probably, you know, a good choice. If you're looking for, hey, you know what, I have full workloads, or I have a SharePoint Fizz site, or something like that, and it's kind of tapping into the deeper levels of SharePoint, then you might want to consider, you know, the SharePoint IaaS part. The other thing is, you know, it may be that you want to expose a departmental app. The other thing, right, that you want to spin up and spin down, and you change on a regular basis. Another reason why you might want to select the IaaS. But I think at the heart of it, what it comes down to is I have a team of 100 people. They just want to use SharePoint Online. It's simple to get up and running. I can have it up and running within 10 minutes and have people provisioned. That's probably the right option. You know, if you want deeper level lob apps and things like that, then you're probably looking at, maybe SharePoint on IaaS. Does that answer your question? We will have an FAQ that kind of guides you through some of that. I'm waiting to get some of that from the marketing group. But we can talk more afterwards if you want. Any other questions on this? You guys still excited? Yeah, woo! Wednesday, Tech Ed. All right. All right, cool. So I'm going to shut down the VM here pretty soon, so please don't try and run any DOS attacks on it. All right, back to my PowerPoint. Okay, so how did I go about doing that? So I logged onto my Azure portal. Again, you need to have an account to do that. Created a new VM. Of course, I could upload one as well. The nice thing about the VM features is I can basically create an image. So if I had a SharePoint image I wanted to distribute across my whole organization, I could do that. I then You know, I didn't do this, but you can create a VNet if you want and have that cloud network. So you have multiple servers kind of connected up into one virtual network. And of course, one could be Active Directory, et cetera, et cetera. And then you would configure the VMs as you normally would. This is not any special sauce. For you IT pros out there who have actually built a server farm for SharePoint, it's the same sort of goo. The thing is, you're pointing it at other, you know, SQL servers that are sitting within this virtual network that are within the cloud as opposed to on premises. Or what's really interesting is the fact that, and I think this is the big reason that we're seeing a lot of people gravitate towards PowerShell, is there's a lot of automation that you can run in PowerShell. So here's an example of a PowerShell script where you can basically go ahead and create an entire farm. Now, the three ellipses, or the ellipsis there represents the fact that, you know, you've got multiple similar steps here, but I could basically go through with PowerShell and create an entire SharePoint farm as opposed to doing it in the portal, okay? Underlying the portal are a set of REST APIs that you can access, and that's essentially what's going on here. This PowerShell script is leveraging all these underlying objects to go ahead and basically automatically create the SharePoint farm and configure it for me, okay? Again, for more information on that, Paul is basically going to take this script and make it live tomorrow. He's going to run through the entire thing for you. And so if you're really interested in the farm and the cloud perspective, I would encourage you to check his session out tomorrow morning. I think it's tomorrow morning, first thing. So all cloud solutions. This is where we get into talking about, okay, we've gone from a data sink. We've talked about, you know, the second part, which was media files, and we've talked about infrastructure as a service. Now, each of these have elements, potentially, of on-premises instance of SharePoint. But what if we want to go completely to the cloud? And I'm going to say something that really, in some sense, contradicts what I just said back there, you know, but I think we have a great story here as a company with regard to Office 365 and Azure. That's really good when we start looking at it compared to our competitors. But we as a company don't talk enough about this. I'm not sure why, but the fact is I can take SharePoint online and begin to use Azure to really augment that experience from a custom code perspective, or even just a user perspective. Now, there's a number of different patterns I can build out that allow me to build a really interesting and compelling set of solutions in the cloud. Here you can see that I've got one very simply. I'm just accessing a database. Another one where I'm leveraging a service. Another one that's actually got some authentication or at least some, you know, some SSL associated with it. And another one there that has lob associated with it. So the point is, there's multiple patterns across this all cloud solution perspective that I can build that allow me to have a fairly, I would say, complete, you know, experience. Now again, you know, for those of you who are SharePoint developers, you'll understand the context of a sandbox solution and the restrictions that a sandbox solution brings into the picture. Who knows what a sandbox solution is? A few of you, right? For those that don't, basically it's think of it as an isolated, you know, web part or an isolated object within SharePoint that you can't reach out and do things, right? So for example, in SharePoint Online, I could have a sandbox solution, but I can't have a web service go out and kind of connect to somewhere else across domain, right? It's kind of restrictive in that sense. You can do a lot of things with it, but in essence, if I deploy a service into Azure, I want to be able to reach into that somehow. And so I can't do that via the traditional sandbox solution approach. I have to do things like using jQuery and Silverlight and those types of things, okay? Now that said, that doesn't mean you can't do powerful things. So let's take a look at an architecture where I'm going to build an external list as a web service proxy. You'll see the call go across, the data will be accessed, and then I'll have some level of device interoperability. Okay? This is a little bit of code, so this is where we kind of get into the 300 level, but I'll try and explain as we go through it. So let's kill this here. Let's go back to my things here. Here we can see the cloud services. This, in essence, is where I'm going to deploy this service, where this service is going to live. If we actually look at the code, here you can see that here's my code, and before I get there, I just want to do one thing. If I ever want to deploy an app into Azure, for those of you who haven't built one, I go cloud, click OK. That allows me to have all these different options. See there? I'll click WCF, click OK. And once it creates this kind of service for me, you can see that it's got this wrapper, okay? This wrapper project here. allows me to directly publish into my cloud environment, which in essence is this here. That's the connection point, just so you can kind of have it conceptually in your mind. So when I go over here into my, basically my guy here, which is a service that I've built, you can see that the code here is fairly simple. What I've got behind the scenes, I've got a SQL database, and I've got a couple of methods here that allow me to talk to it. I've got to build these methods out, and then deploy them, and then leverage them in SharePoint Online. You know, I'm using an entity data model, so you can see the grades entities. For those of you who are coders, this is fairly straightforward. For those of you who aren't, I'm basically just zipping through the data, creating an object that I can pass back into SharePoint, and it understands what to do with it. Simply put, that's what it is. Okay? Same thing down here. Again, I don't want to belabor the code too much. I have this available on my blog if you want to see it. Now, the thing comes, if I want to actually use this in practice, what do I need to do? Basically, I have to go into this is my SharePoint Online site, and this is the finished product. This is every time I go ahead and view the item, that calls one of the methods that you just saw against the data that exposes it. But the service, it lives inside of Windows Azure. The data lives inside a SQL database. So the point is we're working together to kind of take that data and pull it back and expose it inside of my SharePoint Online site. Okay? Now one thing we can do here is I'll go ahead and just open up Edit and SharePoint Designer. The way in which I make that connection is through something called an entity or an external content type. Probably something you don't necessarily need to be super familiar with if you're not going to do this, but just, again, conceptually, how do you bring these things together? It's just an XML file that sits between my SharePoint site and my service and the data, and it connects them up. Okay? So I go here into external content types. Excuse me. And here you can see I can create a new external content type. I go new external content type, foo. And I can go here and basically just discover a new one by pointing it at my web service. And then basically just create a list. And that's as simple as it gets, right? Again, there's tons of walkthroughs on this on the web, so I'm not going to walk through all of this. And the result is this guy right here. And so you can see this is basically loading data from my SQL database via web service. And I also have a secure one. So if I wanted to actually have an HTTPS endpoint, I could have one that's secure or one that's not. Now, the secure one gets into a little tricky. Then you need, you know, you've got certificates that you have to worry about. You've got, you know, username and passwords that you have to pass back and forth and manage in your service. So the code gets a little trickier. But again, I have another hands-on lab on my blog that walks you through how to do that as well. Okay? So lots of guidance in and around how to do this stuff. And the types of things that you can do can get very interesting, right? So if you go back to, let's say, grades. Here you can see that, well, I can go ahead and build jQuery against my external list. So if I wanted to code against it, I could. If I wanted to go down, let's see if the Silverlight's working. Here you can see that I can go down and build out Silverlight apps against it as well. And these jQuery and Silverlight apps can also go directly against the services or the data. Okay? That's how we get around the sandbox solution restriction. All right? So in a nutshell, very quickly, went through the fact that you can create a service, deploy it into Azure, consume that service via SharePoint Designer, create an external list, and code against it if you wanted to create an all-cloud solution. Therein lies, you know, Windows Azure kind of is the bridge work between your data and your SharePoint Online site. Okay? Any questions on that one? Okay, good. You guys still awake? Good. All right. Oh, I didn't finish that. I cheated you guys of the moving data. I'm so sorry. All right, you saw that. So there's a lot of potential there in terms of leveraging different patterns. The interesting thing, you know, I talked about SQL database, but you don't necessarily have to have SQL database as your endpoint. It could be OData. It could be REST. It could be some other, you know, endpoint. You literally could connect it up to a service bus that's talking to an on-premises system. Lots of things that you could do. I think where it gets a bit hairy, though, is just in passing around username and passwords. Because, you know, one thing you can't do right now with SharePoint Online is pass tokens. Okay, from like the SP user token, you couldn't kind of go and authenticate that. That's just a tough thing to do. Now, a little later on today, Chris Johnson's going to be talking about building SharePoint online applications in a hybrid world. So if that's of interest to you, I would certainly make sure you check that out. All right, so the process again that I did, created a SQL Azure database. I wrote a service wrapper around it. I could have optionally added a certificate that would have made it HTTPS and a username password and configured that. I exposed the endpoint in SharePoint Designer, created an external content type, provided permissions, and created an external list. Lots of good stuff there. One of the interesting things is if we look at what activity do we have going on there around SharePoint and Azure, we have, we're doing some interesting work with DocAv, where they've got some beta products available where directly leveraging Azure. So I wanted to give them a call out here. So that's exciting to see some momentum there. Also, Lightning Tools has a little beta product out where they've got service bus connectivities into the cloud as well. So moving forward, I think the one thing I did want to talk a little bit about is identity, right? Because that's always the tricky piece when we're managing applications in the cloud. There is this idea of Active Directory. You know, I think you might have heard about it as we talked about earlier on in the week in the keynote, I think it was mentioned, but there's certainly a session on it. You could take a VM and create that in the context of how I showed you before with Windows Azure and have a direct Active Directory, kind of self-contained Active Directory server, or have it connected back to your on-premises instance of SharePoint. You could have an ADFS federation that directly kind of integrates with Office 365, so there's that. And you could actually code with what was formerly Access Control Service, which is now Active Directory, Windows Azure Active Directory, that you can use as well. I'm not going to go through every one of these. There are lots of different ways to set permissions. I think the one I missed here was to your question earlier on was the shared access permissions on the blob. That's another thing that you could do here and kind of map in some way, shape, or form to an SP user. But in general, just lots of things that you can do. Actually, I do have it there. Sorry. I did put it there. So lots of things that you can do in the way of managing identity. And I know that there's some third-party partners out there with tools that have kind of the seamless experience, so if you have them as plugins. But this, in general, is kind of the gamut if we think about what's available or not available for Microsoft's perspective. So to kind of close down, if we think about differentiation, how do I think about these three areas, right? We talked about IaaS, we talked about PaaS, we talked about a little bit about SaaS. I think that if I think about infrastructure as a service, I think it's going to be really good for a number of SharePoint workloads. We're early in the process, right? And so I think what we're trying to do is get some guidance, get some FAQs out there, get some reference architecture and white papers written so, you know, the IT pros understand what can and can't be done. And the developers understand how they go about doing it. And I think, you know, definitely Fizz is one of those workloads that we're looking at, you know, making sure is forefront at the forefront of IaaS. Also, I would say, you know, departmental workloads, that type of thing. You know, I haven't tested out a 250 server farm in Azure yet. I just haven't done that. And I think we'll probably get to that scale at some point in time because we do have customers asking us to do that for them. But I think it's definitely reasonable to use it for, you know, some dev and test environments. You saw that I could kind of plug into mine, and I had my, you know, Visual Studio 2012 RC up and running. You may find challenges sometimes with just network configuration and performance, but I think, you know, the Active Directory and the Brooklyn solve a lot of that, which is nice. And I think it's a really interesting hybrid story, right? So again, when I go and talk to folks in Europe, and they tell me that, hey, I can't expose this data out, all of a sudden now we have a place where you can contain data in your own private data center and have a way of kind of plugging into it via Active Directory or some Brooklyn connection back to do some reporting. PaaS to me, I know that a lot of the reporting this week and PR has been around IaaS. I still think we have a really, really strong PaaS story that we don't often talk about. I don't know why. I think the developers would probably agree with me. I think there's a ton of stuff you can do there with SharePoint and Azure. So definitely, I just showed you a couple today. You can do, you know, like I said, you can use the services, you can use media services. There's a whole set of, you know, components and processes that can be built into your SharePoint applications just by virtue of PaaS. And of course, SaaS, that's the Office 365 model. So lots you can do there. That is more of the all-cloud model. We're seeing people, whether it's smaller sized companies or remote offices, be plugging more into Office 365. You know, for that core workload, we're still seeing that as an enterprise server. And of course, there's lots of opportunity there to bridge with CRM Online, which is now officially a part of the Office 365 family, and BCS support. And again, you know, the one thing I didn't show you that Office 365 does have is a mobile view as well, a native mobile view for Windows Phone 7, so that's nice. So there's a number of different assets here that you can get, you can plug into. I blog pretty regularly in this area, and probably moving forward, we'll focus a lot on the IaaS for the next couple of weeks, just so I wrap my own head around it as we do more testing on it. And then, of course, there's some other assets here that you can use as well. I would recommend the Azure Developer Training Kit as just as a place to start if you've not done any Azure development or are not sure what Azure is. It's just a good entrance into kind of getting your hands dirty. And of course, there's other developer training kits as well. And they're all free. Okay, you just download them and you can use them. There's no cost to them except to set up your environment, get the software there. But above and beyond that, you know, I think feel free to reach out to me if you want to contact me for any reason. There's my email address. I'm only too happy to field questions. And of course, like I said, I post things regularly on my blog. And feel free to get things there as well. I think with that, I've got 8 minutes left here. So I can hang for questions, or we can open it up for questions, or I can let you go and just stand up here for questions. So how about I stand up here, let you go, and then whoever wants to ask a question, come up, okay? All right, thanks very much.